You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Cool Zone Media.
Welcome to Better Offline. I'm your host, Ed Zitron.
Better Offline.
Today I'm joined by Cool Zone Media's Robert Evans, and he's joining me to talk more about the growth at all costs rot economy. It's the thing that's making your beloved tech products worse to make someone else hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's so good, Robert. We love it, don't we, folks?
I'm having a great time. I love that I used to make a living teaching like people who would pay, you know, to the company I worked for huge amounts of money to be trained in like how to use Google more effectively, all these little dorks and stuff that allow you to like really specialize your search settings. And I love that just in the last couple of years, Google has placed a shotgun to the base of their searches engine skull, pulled the trigger, and now a bunch of people are desperately trying to be like, oh, there's this new Perplexity AI or this other AI search engine. Like, it's much better. And it's like, no, it's slightly better than Google now, but they're all worse than Google used to be. None of this is a step forward. They're just pains in the ass.
So one of the reasons that that's happening isn't just the public markets. The public markets are a big part of the problem, and they're the ones that incentivize this whole growth at all costs phenomenon. But I actually want you to know that this has another cause, and it's private investing and venture capital. Those are the ones who are pretty much putting a thumb on the head of innovation, that are stopping great companies being built by incentivizing, well, kind of a form of slaughter, fattening up pigs to sell to the market rather than making something innovative.
Yeah, like some sort of like a pig sheep hybrid, like a peep.
But you could eat the meat from that.
Yeah. I think it would probably be like the clone from the fourth Alien movie that just is begging for you to kill it. But then, you know, you get some sort of fucked up bacon.
But instead of getting that fucked up bacon, what you actually get is more like the creature from The Thing, the weird spider creature,
yeah.
Which is funny, yeah. Scary, but not particularly useful.
Yeah, probably not very tasty.
So before companies like Uber reach the public markets, they're fueled by a much more violent and reckless form of funding, venture capital. Venture capitalists can be seed stage investors or regular guy putting 10 grand into a company, all the way up to massive firms with hundreds of people like Andreessen Horowitz, who invested early in Facebook and Airbnb.
Yeah, like the thing that I've always, that I came to realize about like venture capital money just from studying scams is you have like, Cory Doctorow talks about this a lot, but like in traditional scam terminology, you have this period called like the bezel, right? Which is the time between starting the scam when everybody else realizes it's a fucking scam. It's the period in which you're making a bunch of money. And like that's where all of these VC people like make their fortune. You know, some of the companies they back do turn out to be long-term profitable, but they don't have to be. If you can just sort of get this IPO where everybody values it super highly for a while and cash out what you have in the company during that period of time. If the company fails a few years after its IPO, if it turns out that like it wasn't really a good business, you still get rich. Like the key thing is it's great if you wind up making a successful business in their eyes, but you don't have to for them to make a lot of money, right? They just have to be able to get out before, you know, the scam reaches its conclusion.
They have to reach a liquidity event. So either selling their company to someone else or taking it public. And a big thing is that venture capital, yes, like all investment things, is always just evil at its core, but it used to be much smaller. It used to be maybe $1 billion in a year that would go into tech startups. Now it's in 2022, it's like $240 billion. And I'll get to why that's an obscene number later, specifically around crypto. But when it was smaller, investment wasn't done with these ideas of these 5, 10, 20x multipliers. It was, I want to put money early into this company because I think they're making a good product that people will buy. The problem was companies like Google and Apple to a lesser extent, but really companies like Facebook getting these massive multi-billion, $100 billion valuations. Suddenly startups stopped needing 10, 20, 50, 100 grand at seed stage and started needing $2 to $5 to $10 million at the seed or even Series A stage. And suddenly venture capitalists started moving away from this idea of good businesses that could last without them. And they started to go into a form of kind of symbolic capital, investing in things that looked value but aren't necessarily valuable at their whole. As a result, they create this ecosystem where these companies go through this kind of volatile, erosive cycle of growth, with the only goal being that they get to a stage when they become someone else's problem, either by listing on the public markets or selling to a much bigger company.
Yeah, and the whole crypto industry is essentially taking the, like, it comes out of nowhere when people who came to expect this and in a lot of cases got rich for the first time through this chunk of the tech industry and then realized, well, if we create a way to utilize some of these psychological phenomenons and like some of these like ideas but without any kind of regulation, like that's where crypto comes from, right? Like it's purely the scam aspects of this with none of the real businesses.
And you're completely right, and I will shortly get to that as well, because let me set the scene of the current state of the valley. A startup emerges, they're considered the next big thing, they ideally reach unicorn status, which refers to them being worth $1 billion. And they experience unprecedented growth. They explode. And nobody asks the question, hey, are you making more money than you're spending? OpenAI is a great example of this right now. They get these articles saying, oh, we've got over $1 billion in revenue. No one's saying, how much are you spending to get there? But suddenly, after all of this venture investment, after all of this hype, they're challenging the big dogs of their industry. They're getting in there and they raise more and more money. And then they buy up a few more companies, and now they're at this big, fat, nasty penultimate stage when people begin to ask if it was a good business. And at this point, they either have to sell it to someone else or take it public. So the destination may change, but the journey's always kind of the same. You grow, you try and find a business model, you grow a bit more, and then you face reality. The ideal state, by the way, for venture capital is before this point. Reality should not interfere with making money. So venture capital pumps millions and billions of dollars into these ideas that might kind of sell a product or a service, but really just resemble something that was worth something in the past. Perhaps the founder is a white guy who looks kind of like Mark Zuckerberg. This is literally a phenomenon in the 2010s. It was guys who looked like Mark Zuckerberg wearing hoodies. Or maybe it's, hey, Uber's a big company. What if you're the Uber for something else? Uber for laundry, for example.
Yeah.
A lot of those companies died.
Yeah.
And what they're trying to do is keep the dance going until someone is dumb enough to buy them or they can convince Morgan Stanley to help them go public. And the real problem with the Valley right now is people are conflating the concept of great ideas with things they like and things that might sell. And the result is less innovative things are happening. These companies that are getting the money, OpenAI getting $10 billion mostly in cloud credits isn't making the world better. It's locking a major startup into being a customer of Microsoft and making a product that has yet to really prove itself.
Yeah, I think people are surprised by that. But like, what we mean is not that like you can't do things that are cool or surprising with this stuff, but that that does not conclude with it being a great business, right? A bunch of people are flipping out about that new the video generator. We can make like a minute long video that kind of looks like a California boomtown or whatever. And it's like, yeah, that's cool, but like, is this, number one, something that's realistically going to be used in some things? Yeah, I'm sure it'll be in some things. Is this going to, like, replace actually making movies? Well, probably not. And that kind of means there's probably a pretty limited amount of money that you're going to make with this right now. Like, it's something that could potentially be a business that is profitable, but could it be a business that is more profitable than the amount of money they are continuing to shuffle into OpenAI? That actually is still an open question.
And the problem is that I'm not even saying that venture capital shouldn't happen. I do think it is a necessary force to get some ideas off the ground. But the problem is it's controlling the valley now. And as a result, the things that are getting funded are the problem. It's not that there are no good ideas. It's not that there are no good founders. It's that the funding is coming from an increasingly more centralized group of people who are pretty much, and I get everyone's profit seeking, every investor wants a return, but there are venture capitalists out there who just don't care about creating new things. In fact, they're very, very, very focused on keeping the status quo going. And that's where Andreessen Horowitz comes in, my absolute favorite venture capital firm. You may remember them from Facebook and Airbnb.
We love Mark Andreessen. Yeah.
So Andreessen Horowitz is amazing because they're a fairly large firm and they have various partners who all walk around making speeches and they do their tweets vaguely saying like decentralization is the future and it's good because of that. And you're like, what does that mean? And then they don't want to talk to you any further. Chris Dixon being one of the more ugly ones, a partner that is entirely focused on cryptocurrency, which I'm shortly going to get to. And nowhere was Andreessen Horowitz more crooked than crypto. The scam that Andreessen Horowitz pulled on the crypto markets in 2021 and 2022 should be studied as a financial crime. And indeed, it should be one. What it actually is a way that they managed to turn basically money into more money without ever creating anything of value. They pumped billions of dollars into these things called Web3 companies, which were allegedly new companies that were decentralized. But they were really just shells for a cryptocurrency token that someone could then hype and sell before the SEC got aware of the problem. And I really must be clear how few of these companies actually did anything. Let me take a step back. Let me explain how cryptocurrency companies made their money in like 2021, 2022. They would put out a website for the thing and they would say, we're going to do a decentralized social network. And we're going to have this token. This token will reward people for their contributions to the social network. There were like 80 different versions of this idea. That token would then get a financial valuation through trading on various different crypto exchanges, Binance or Coinbase in many cases. And at this point, you'd think, cool, what does the company do? And that was the wrong question to ask. The companies don't really do anything. Or they're just traditional companies that have created a token as a means of monetizing a market. What Andreessen Horowitz would do was invest in these companies and then receive a massive amount of these tokens at this vastly discounted price, kind of like how it works with stock in startups. And then you would hope, in the case of the stock for the startup, that you could sell it on the public markets or perhaps you could sell to another company. This usually takes about 5 to 10 years. But what was amazing about the crypto scam was Andreessen Horowitz only had to wait a few months for these tokens, which they had bought at a massive discount, to list on, say, Coinbase, a major cryptocurrency exchange where Mark Andreessen has a board seat. This allowed them to dump all of their investment, which they got at this remarkably small price, onto retail investors, believing that they were in the ground floor. They basically invested in the stock market, invested in Morgan Stanley, invested in every part and just funneled money between places. It was completely insane. And they made billions of dollars doing this. I feel crazy whenever I read about this stuff because it happened in broad daylight.
It's you know, you can say what you will about like the ability of anyone to accumulate that much money. But at least even with like, I don't think Zuckerberg certainly wouldn't say he deserves to have billions of dollars. But if you say, if you like say, okay, this guy's crazy rich. He's worth this many billions. What did he do? Well, he made this thing that everybody uses. That is a thing, right? As opposed to like this, which is, how did he become a billionaire? Well, he played a really, really fancy version of the shell game they play on the street in New York in all those movies from the 80s.
And it's crazy because there was one called Definity they invested in. It's called, like, it had a token called ICP, Internet Computer, I think it stands for. That's not done anything. That company's never made anything. No one's using that. There are no users. But Andreessen Horowitz made so much money off of it. At the beginning of the pandemic, Mark Andreessen did this big bloviating post saying, it's time to build. But I think the real fun scam of this, the thing that makes me laugh but also cry, is that there was a prolonged period where Andreessen Horowitz and many venture capitalists invested in building nothing. They found these shell companies that they then filled full of venture dollars. In exchange, they got a bunch of tokens that they were allowed to dump onto the markets. They conned so many people. They invested in Yuga Labs, who makes the Bored Ape Yacht Club.
Well, that's good. That one's going to pay off. That investment's going to pay off. I've seen their Bored Ape World of Warcraft thing that they believe is going to be the future of social networking or whatever.
And this is the thing. These companies never really built anything. They invested, they got the early ape coin. I really hate saying this stuff out loud. It's very annoying. Yeah, they got the ape coins, and they were able to profit off of that. And then they have the temerity to say, Chris Dixon went on Hard Fork, the New York Times podcast, and said, oh yeah, we don't invest in anyone who has their own tokens. It's just, they're just fucking liars. They're just liars lying to us all.
I do kind of wonder, one of the things that makes me believe in some sort of like universal spirit guiding reality is that like Peter Jennings had to die when he did. We simply couldn't have had a world in which Peter Jennings was explaining ApeCoin to people over the television. Like that wouldn't have been allowed. Like that's simply unimaginable.
And it's just having to sit here and say, yeah, ApeCoin, that's how they made their money. ApeChain. Oh yeah, Definity. ICP. It's these things that sucked. But also, as funny as this is, this was a prolonged period when nothing was created other than money for already rich guys. The people disadvantaged by dumping these tokens were regular investors who in 2021, 2022, believed that the crypto market was going to make them wildly rich, and it didn't. Coinbase, who Andreessen Horowitz invested in, they helped millions of people lose billions of dollars because they did a Super Bowl commercial in February 2022, which eventually led, I think if you invested on that day, if you waited to sell any later than March, you would have lost your shirt. You would have just been at a loss. However, if you'd waited, it's now back up to 67,000. So who the fuck knows? Either way.
Yeah.
The big thing with the crypto craze was that it was the most pornographic version of the problem of venture capital today, in that it was entirely symbolic value. It was, a decentralized computer. What a novel idea. Are we building it? Who knows? But we have a token today. Yay, let's make some money. And in 2022, crypto startups raised $33 billion of venture capital, which is more than 10% of the $241 billion that was invested in that entire year.
Jesus.
And none of them have made a real product. Yuga Labs, you laugh at the Bored Ape Yacht Club, but that is actually one of the few real products that actually launched.
Yeah, they do seem to be making a video game. It looks like shit, but it does seem to be a video game.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And I think that it's a symptom of a much larger problem, both in that they're not investing to actually make cool tech happen, but they're just trying to make as much money in the most lazy way possible. But I also think there's another problem. I don't think these freaks actually know what good looks like anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And nowhere else is that more obvious than Adam goddamn Newman.
Yeah, baby. We love him.
So Adam Newman, for those of you who don't know, ran a company called WeWork. WeWork's business model was that they would buy or lease a building and they would sublease it to people, allowing them to like run their company out of it or use a co-working space. Theoretically a good idea until you looked at the financials where it constantly bled money almost immediately because real estate is a terrible investment.
Yeah.
And also, it was way too cheap. It was way too cheap from the very beginning. So they were always operating at a loss.
Yeah, Newman, the thing that's interesting about him, because he and Elizabeth Holmes were kind of having their glory days around the same time. And they're both very similar figures. Newman was much smarter because he picked a field where like no one was going to vengefully come after him for fucking up. Because everyone in real estate is some kind of con artist at that scale, as opposed to trying to get into, like, blood science.
But what's great about it is he turned a company that was at one point worth $47 billion into one worth $10.65 million.
Mm-hmm.
And then the company died. It went into Chapter 11 bankruptcy.
We all love it.
And right now, those cleaning up the mess of WeWork are just desperately trying to like renegotiate its debts and just being like, this company, I'm sorry, I can't pay you due to this business model, which I have inherited. At one point, WeWork traded at $500 or something a share. And I believe right now it's like 0.05 cents. So you think. Now, there's been a show about WeWork with Jared Leto in it of Morbius fame. And this is one of the more legendary startups.
Yeah. And I choose to believe, by the way, that it is within the Morbius canon, that this is what he's doing when his character is not unshowered in a hoodie fighting crime.
Fighting Matt Smith from Doctor Who.
Yeah.
So, as we've established, Adam Newman, a.k.a. Morbius, you'd think, okay, this guy famously TV show about how bad he was at business. This guy'd be run out of town, right? Wrong! Adam Newman managed to raise, in August 2022, $350 million for his new company, Flow.
Great. I love how people learn lessons.
And what's great about Flow is when you go and look at actually what it is, no one can really tell you. It appears to be a rent-to-own apartment company, but it isn't obvious what the actual difference is between it and I don't know what BlackRock's been doing for years, the asset management firms have been doing. Nevertheless, Marc Andreessen absolutely busted his nut everywhere to get $350 million into this company. They claim that there will be community-oriented features and that there will be something special about being involved in Flow. Now, you think that I'm just being vague. It's been like a year and a half since this company went out, and there's really nothing that like out there for it. And I think it's because Adam Newman just was someone that Marc Andreessen remembered. I still cannot work out why this happened. He's always been full of shit, just to be clear. Because there was this, Andreessen Horowitz actually released a video an interview with Adam Neumann. He was describing home ownership and why home ownership was very special. He was saying it's the difference between calling your own building super to unclog the toilet or unclogging it yourself. And he was saying that doing so, and I quote, shifts your thinking from being transactional to actually being part of a community and feeling like you own something.
But you don't want them to own anything. You just want them to have to do shit that the landlord is supposed to do.
Like, but also, if I have to unclog my shitter, I'm not sitting there being like, yeah, damn, I love being part of the community. I'm like, what the fuck did I eat?
Well, it's also like, it's fucked up because like one of the, I mean, this is actually unclogging your toilet is always on the person using the toilet. That's not really a thing that involves changes based on whether or not you're the landlord. But one of like the bit like renting, there's a lot of things that suck about renting, namely the fact that like it keeps getting more and more expensive. But one of the benefits of renting is that if something breaks, you're supposed to just be able to call the owner and they have to fix it. It's not on you.
Right.
If your fucking AC breaks, it's on them to make it work. And he's saying that like, no, if you are responsible for fixing things but have absolutely no ownership of them, it's fine because that makes you part of a community. And that's nuts.
But also, that, just to be clear, that quote is from an interview he gave at Andreessen Horowitz, at his investor.
Yeah.
If I was watching that as an investor, unless I was completely disconnected from humanity, I'd be like, this guy's never unclogged the toilet.
Yeah.
This guy's never done home maintenance. Also, why would you call your super to unclog your toilet? Just have a plunger. Unless you really back that bad boy up.
You have to have done a lot more damage than that, yeah.
Yeah, you're literally shitting bricks in this case.
Yeah.
But I think it's more indicative of the fact that I don't think Adam Neumann has had a normal human experience in quite some time, and I don't think Mark Andreessen has either, and yet he just got this insane amount of money to address problems allegedly related to a thing he does not understand.
Yeah, love to see.
Which is also something he's been proven to be bad at. Adam Neumann lost billions of dollars of SoftBank's money, which is really funny when you think about it. And actually, do you want to hear a fun scam? He took a loan out on his stock at WeWork and actually had to put his stock from WeWork out to SoftBank, took real money from them and leveraged his stock. And then SoftBank was like, hey, if you don't pay this back, we're going to take your stock. And he was like, yeah, sure, fuck you. That stock's worth like $30 now. I'll just keep the real money and never repay you. See you, bitch.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. This is why, and I think situations like this are where people are going to start really getting blackpilled with the tech industry. Because I think that you see things like this happening and you think, are they laughing at us?
Yeah.
Like, is this, in a sane world, Adam Neumann wouldn't see a single dollar for the rest of his life. Yet he got $350 million goddamn dollars. It was immediately a billion-dollar company before it had done anything. And all they have to show for it is a 639-unit apartment building in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah. And when you see a guy with the record that Neumann has get a company valued at that, what that means is that investors are not valuing it that much because they think it will actually make that much money. They're valuing it that high because they think this guy is good at spin enough that we'll be able to flip this shit and get some money out of it before the company collapses, right? We can do an IPO, our shares will be worth money, and then we cash the fuck out. That's what they're seeing, and they may be right. It may wind up being, WeWork made some people a lot of money.
But that's the thing. I actually wonder if that system works anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they're going to be able to get liquidity on this, because real estate is a fairly, it can be a variable asset, but it's also kind of an annoyingly real one. You can't really go to someone and be like, actually, this apartment building's worth $50 million more because of the future of innovation. No, it's a fucking apartment.
Yeah.
And I just think that venture capital has completely lost the plot and has lost its ability to say what good is. It's almost like there are some of them who are con artists feeding con artists.
Yeah.
And some of the largest investment rounds the last few years have just gone into systems like this, gone into things that when you look at them, you're like, this doesn't need this much money. Why are you doing this? And I think it's because they just are gamblers. I just think they're gambling, and they're gambling based on an increasingly small amount of information. because it's been 20 years since they'd done something of note. There was a company called Noom, which was a weight loss app that connected you with coaches and various things. They raised $540 million in 2022. Not sustainable and not profitable either. But also, the entire weight loss industry is worth about $4 billion. So you're saying they are worth that much of an...
like an eighth of the whole industry.
Yeah.
Right? And if I'm mathing right.
Yeah, I was also failing to do the math in real time there, but whatever. People know I don't math good. Clubhouse is one of my favorites, though. I'm not sure if you remember Clubhouse. It was this audio app that grew during the pandemic, and everyone said, this is the future. And it's basically Twitter Spaces. It's what we know as Twitter Spaces now, a live audio room where you can go in and have, in this case, extremely vacuous tech conversations. It was big during the pandemic because everyone was at home, and you had people like Mark Andreessen, who of course had invested, going on there and saying stuff like, oh, the future of technology is the future. And everyone went, wow, Mark, thank you. And there was this weird period where almost every week there was some kind of valuation story that would quote unquote leak. And it would be like, oh, it's worth $2 billion. Oh, it's worth $4 billion now. And then they started disappearing and nothing was really happening. And as people started leaving their houses again after the lockdowns ended, Clubhouse just kind of faded to black. The thing that pissed me off about that was the amount of stories in major media outlets claiming that Clubhouse was the future specifically of radio, which is a $12 billion industry total that constantly has trouble making money. Not that we'd know anything about that, but...
I mean, the fun thing about that to me is that, like, we know really well what, like, the issues that radio has with making money are, like, due in part to, you know, ways in which advertising and stuff has changed. But, like, pretty durably, the things that people want out of radio are, like, people they like talking about things they're interested in, right?
Right.
Initially, that was like people, DJs they liked talking about the cool music, but it's expanded now beyond that. But it's never just been like random unscripted conversations between people who have mics of varying quality. Like, that's not particularly a thing that folks have ever like expressed a desire for. And it's weird to me that anyone thought that like Clubhouse was going to be interesting beyond a very specific subset of people that wanted to suck these people's proverbial dicks.
And it felt like a con in real time as well, because they were pushing, Andreessen Horowitz was pushing every partner they could to use it. They were paying celebrities to go on there. They were getting anyone they could to get on the platform. And they were very clearly behind the scenes trying to get someone to buy it. And then Twitter just built Twitter Spaces. Mm-hmm. And that everyone was like, oh, we can just use this on a network that we use. Clubhouse now, by the way, is really funny. It's 90% scams or 90% people doing manifestation stuff. It's amazing. But there was a brief period where the venture capital elite had spread around enough journalists and enough people on Twitter that they truly believed this was the future. But if you sat there and really thought about it, there was never a point where it could make money. Like you said, unscripted stuff's difficult. It's very difficult. Even when you have really great chemistry with someone, you can trip over stuff, as I just did. There are numerous things that can go wrong. And let's just be honest, none of these tech people were particularly eloquent to begin with. Yet, based on everyone's conversations, everyone's saying, this is the future. This is how, what's our Clubhouse strategy? What are we going to do on Clubhouse? Nothing. Nothing, because you're so boring. But it raised so much money. I think it raised over $1 billion. It was ridiculous. And yet, this is what venture has become, pumping up these very shitty businesses, these non-entities, these features rather than products. And the result is that the money is not going to actually innovative things. And I get it. The venture takes risks. The whole point of venture capital is it's risky money. That's why you buy a 0.5% or a percent of a company for, I don't know, $1 million, just choosing random numbers there. There is a risk to it. And capital is required to get a company off the ground. But the massive, massive amounts of money going into these non-entities, into these, in the case of Flow, Adam Newman's thing, very boring remakes of already boring and kind of not profitable businesses to begin with.
Yeah.
The result is that you get a venture capital industry that makes startups require their existence. You get companies that cannot function without venture capital. You get lossy companies like Uber, who get bigger and bigger without ever finding a business model because venture capital keeps them alive until they've completed the dance that lets them go public or get sold to someone else. And companies like Uber are actually a great example. They're taken public and they get these massive windfalls from VCs, yet they immediately find themselves in this horrible position where they have to start dancing for the real public markets. That's why Uber has become much harder to get an Uber in some markets, and it's much more expensive, yet the drivers are making less money. It's because we're in a situation where Uber now has to become a growth-at-all-costs startup rather than just a venture-backed welfare recipient. And it's just, it's a deeply depressing time because people making real companies, people making new ideas, people, young people in the tech space are now going into this and seeing that the people getting money are just people that look like other people that have made money before, that have ideas that aren't even particularly good, but they sound like something you can flog. The amount of money going to AI right now for companies that have no business model at all, let alone a path to revenue, they just don't, they're just trying to grow and grow and grow. It's just a deeply depressing time. VCs, they put, I think, $41 billion into crypto between January 2021 and 2022. And that was all without crypto ever having done anything. It's what, 2024 now? Like, I just had to ask that.
Yeah.
And crypto is still not doing anything. There's still nothing. There's still Bitcoin's worth $67,000 and there's still no crypto use case. The metaverse, which you would by now have heard an episode about, did absolutely nothing other than rebrand something we'd had for upwards of 15 years. And they raised $120 billion in 2022. These concepts are what are getting money. Innovation isn't. Innovation is not enough to get you investment these days from venture capitalists. No, the thing that you want to do to a VC is find a way to get them in on a scam that you invented. And that's not going to help this world. It's going to destroy the tech ecosystem if we're not careful. And quite honestly, I have no idea what changes the tide on this other than a major startup dying.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity. It's designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals to help cover unexpected expenses, plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. In other words, it's like getting a paycheck for life. We'll say that again. A paycheck for life. Guaranteed. Sounds too good to be true? It's not. It's the Parity Flex annuity. And it's one more example of their commitment to creating a better financial future for women. One where they feel empowered, not excluded, and ready to take on whatever their next chapter holds. Gainbridge believes financial flexibility and security are things we all could use more of. At retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Who's with us? Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Please visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
So when writing The Rot Economy originally, my mate Casey and I were talking about fire and how growth is like a fire. If you build a nice, sustainable fire, it will keep you warm, cook your food, sustain your life. But if the only thing you care about is how big your fire is, then all it's going to do is set fire to everything around it. And it's going to require so much more to keep it burning. Eventually, you'll have nothing left. But if you desperately desire that fire, you'll constantly have to find new things to burn, no matter what the cost is. And that's kind of where the markets are at this point. We've kind of turned the private and public markets over to arsonists. We've created the conditions where we celebrate people like Marc Andreessen for making these big investments, these big bets, these big, nasty companies that don't do anything, or the even bigger firms like Google and Meta, who are just turning against their users and, frankly, turning against the people, the tens of thousands of people that they regularly fire. Venture capital and the public markets are no longer rewarding good businesses or good CEOs that run good, sustainable companies. They're rewarding arsonists, people that can steer the kind of growth that raises the value of an asset, even if that value isn't even attached to the value it provides to humanity. Elon Musk's success, everything he's done with Tesla, didn't come from his love of science or that he ended the monopoly of the internal combustion engine. It came from his ability to manipulate symbolic value, his hype man mentality. He worked out in as early as 2013 that anyone in the world in a media outlet would cover the fact that he spoke about anything.
Mm-hmm.
He's made so much money for him and people buying Tesla stock pretty much through lies and half-truths. There's always a good reason to buy Tesla for an idiot in the market, because Elon Musk is always saying, oh yes, now Teslas will now drive side to side. It doesn't matter if it's true. It doesn't matter if it never happens. Elon Musk promised autopilot for years and years and years until it actually arrived, and then it would arrive in these little bits and chunks, and then it started killing people. Tesla isn't a good company. It's a good stock to buy, and that is a problem. That is where we are right now with the public markets. And with the private markets, we're not far behind. So Google's Sundar Pichai, he isn't paid $200-odd million a year because he's a good CEO. Google's destroyed search. We've been over that ad nauseum. And it sucks. You'd think that someone who destroyed the most beloved tech product used by billions of people, that has changed people's lives and will continue to do so. This is empirical fact, the damage he has done to the tech ecosystem and his core product. Yet he's rewarded. He's paid this obscene amount of money. The fact that Google's core product is getting worse doesn't matter at all, because Pichai's paid because he finds new innovative ways to increase the growth of the company, even if doing so makes the product suck. And the consequences are that these companies will continue to invest in things that grow the overall revenue of the company or their market share over everything else. They will mass hire, they will mass fire, and they'll do so because there are no consequences from the market. They don't care. All they want to know is that the company will continue growing. Venture capitalists are just as bad. They don't mind. As long as you have enough money to keep going to the next funding round, as long as you can keep growing this symbolic value, it doesn't matter if you hire and fire people at random. It doesn't matter if your product's kind of wonky, as long as it's good enough to flog to someone else. Look at the AI industry. Look how bad ChatGPT is at certain things. Look at how bad Claude, Anthropic's one is. Doesn't really matter because AI's the future. We can make money off of that at some point. And I think that this is really the problem, and it's the thing that unites the private and the public markets. We're not building things for humans anymore. We're building things for humans that invest money. We're building symbolic capital. And when you do that, you will strangle innovation, and you'll do it at scale. You will build tech for nobody. You will build tech that sucks and doesn't do things and burns money, and in the case of AI, probably rainforests. And the result is just a shittier, worse world. Until we see a seismic shift in how investors treat the companies they invest in, both private and public, this cycle is going to continue, and it's going to make us dumber. I guarantee you that we're going to see every single one of the companies that you've recently seen lay off thousands of people do mass hiring in a year or two. They don't care. They're not punished for this. The labor markets in America don't punish them. The government don't punish them. They will keep fucking with human capital as much as they can because they won't get punished for it. No one's going to hold it against any startup that's done massive layoffs, even if the CEOs are incredibly well paid and ran the company into the ground. Companies aren't structured anymore to evaluate whether a business is sustainable or good or makes something useful. The only thing that they're interested in is making something they can flog.
Yeah. Like, one of the important things to understand about how all of this fits together is that the actual business for most of these tech guys has very little, if not nothing, to do with producing a product or getting people to adopt a product or having any kind of impact on the way people actually use technology. The actual business is in conning other people to think that a business has a value, right?
Yeah.
Like that's become the game, which is, you know, we're doing our episodes on Steve Jobs these next 2 weeks. A lot of bad things we'll have to say about him, but he actually did care about like making a thing and, yeah, and convincing a lot of people to use that thing. And he was good at that. And the it's become so abstracted and so much about just the bezel, just about tricking people so that you can make money before everyone realizes that it's a fucking god. I think it's probably bad for society that's the best way to make money.
And I think that you're exactly right. The way we look at companies, the way we value businesses, the way we value startups, public companies, it doesn't really matter, is just fundamentally broken. It's creating these really nasty cycles where humans are hired and fired at scale, where companies make products worse so that we use them more. Things become more difficult to enrich someone and make our lives worse. And it really is, it goes further than tech as well. It's at the center of everything. Look, why are so many bosses mad about you not coming back to the office? It's because they bought a bunch of real estate that they never needed, or they've leased it, I guess. And then they were like, well, I don't do any real work. And I think what business looks like is when someone's at an office.
Yeah.
And it's because we don't really, as a society, understand what executives do, because we've never asked. We've never really sat and thought, why does an executive get paid so much more than others? What is it that they do? And I think the pandemic and the mass remote work we saw really highlighted that. I think it really showed everyone exactly how big that con was. But I think that we're on the verge of an awakening to this kind of thing. I think as the labor market becomes so much worse, as so many game studios, for example, lay off so many people, they're going to start realizing the executives are making all the money while everyone does all the work, and none of these people are connected to the product. And we're going to keep building things for nobody other than investors until we're at a point where we have entire business ecosystems building for nobody. Just look at the crypto industry.
There's
billions of dollars into crypto. But look at that. Look at the crypto industry. Look how big that con was. Look how much money went into nothing, went into creating nothing. Because that's where we are as a society. That's where innovation is today. In a real ecosystem, in a real tech ecosystem, the heads of the industry wouldn't be trying to find ways to crowbar AI or crypto or metaverse into it because the markets like it. They would be saying, I'm not sure that this is a thing, let alone a business model. None of these companies get blamed for these bad decisions. And as long as they don't, they're going to keep making them. And I think it's going to, and I have a wider theory I have, that it's going to take one of the major tech firms dying to change something. And I think it's possible. I think Facebook is, weirdly enough, the one that I would call first, just because the ad models die.
Yeah.
But until that happens, we're just going to keep having these cycles where the markets don't blame anyone for anything other than the consumer. The consumer is made to almost apologize to the vendor. It really sickens me. I think that this is the jokifying in real time that I get. Because I've been in the tech industry since 2008, and I've been writing about games since like 2004. So I've seen tech as a blob go from something that was, oh, you have nerds who like tech and people use laptops, to everyone has a phone, to everyone is on some level connected to the tech industry now. It's impossible to remove from our lives. But now I look around, and the things that are being created and the things that are being hyped up, they're not for people anymore.
Yeah.
And then the actions of the CEOs don't seem to actually mesh with reality. Why did nobody get fired for overhiring in 2022? So many companies, hundreds of thousands of tech workers were laid off. How did nobody get fired for just hoarding human capital? How did nobody get fired for that?
Yeah, or for like, I mean, if you want to see it for the way that these people do, how did nobody get fired for wasting tens of millions, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars in like stockholders' money, right? Like stuff that should have gone the way that they see things out in dividend payments, like, was instead spent on people the company apparently didn't need? How does no one lose their job over that? If that's the way you're looking at things, that seems like the real problem.
And the amount of layoffs that happened and the amount of, well, I think it was Google spent, what, $1 billion, $2 billion on severance alone?
Yeah.
How did Sundar Pichai not get fired for that? Why did he get so much money? And I hate to say, I think the answer is, people are not people in the eyes of the markets. They don't give a shit. It's just a fuel. This is just the cost of fuel. This is like oil to them, except there are sometimes annoying laws that stop me getting rid of the oil quite as fast. And I think what the tech industry really needs to realize is nothing lasts forever. Nothing lasts forever, and nothing grows forever other than a cancer. And at some point, this whole growth at all costs economy is working pretty well for now. But at some point, the markets will turn on them. Because at some point, someone has to notice, somebody who is investing has to notice, wait, are these actually good companies, or are they just growing and then contracting and then growing and contracting and just never really making anything within the process? It's just deeply worrying. I actually worry about the health of the tech ecosystem long term if we keep pursuing this. We have private companies that are building things to sell to large companies, and large companies that are building things to market their own stock to investors. And at some point, a consumer gets served somewhere within that equation, but nowhere near to the level that it should dictate anyone's choices. A product may be profitable for a while, but there's a line at which profitability comes at the cost of functionality, and your company may simply not be able to grow anymore. Look, a business that can't generate profit isn't a good business, and a business that can never generate a profit deserves to die. These seem like obvious things, but they just don't apply to anyone other than regular people. And the net result of this rotten economy, this broken thing that rewards people that create symbolic capital, is that it kills innovation. If capital isn't invested in providing a good service via, say, a profitable business, it will never sustain things that are actually useful to society. Companies aren't incentivized at the moment to provide better services or improve lives outside of the ways in which they can drain more and more blood and revenue and growth from customers. And right now, the street doesn't care. Just look at Facebook and Instagram, two beloved products that have now grown exceedingly profitable while not providing the basic function that made them big. And frankly, look, if capital wishes to call labor entitled, as they have so many times, if they wish to treat people like shit, as it stands, the private and public markets are not working for you. They're not building things for you. They're not building things for anyone. Google, as it stands, is forcing Gemini, the generative AI, into every corner of their company, not because it's going to make your life better, but because it's going to make them seem more futuristic.
Yep.
As long as private businesses are funded by venture capitalists that are not interested in funding innovation and just want to find more ways to flog money to larger entities, we're not going to see a better world. We're not going to see cooler tech things. We're going to get increasingly more expensive and convoluted versions of things we're already paying for. I hope things can change. I really do. But with the current crop of venture capitalists, I'm not holding my breath. So thank you for listening to today's episode. Robert, thank you for joining me as well.
Thanks for having me on.
This wonderful, happy episode we've done. It's funny. It's in my day job, my PR firm, I do run into decent companies that are doing well, that actually make more money than they're spending, that actually have business plans. But occasionally I'll talk to someone who just throws like 8 buzzwords at me, and they'll have raised this crazy amount of money, and you look at them and you're like, am I in the wrong game? Should I be part of? There is this weird sense. You're like, what am I missing here? And I think that that's what fuels a lot of this, that there are these people getting so rich on nothing. People like, they can't be lying.
There has
right?
to be something. I have to be missing something. And it's like, no, you're not. The business is entirely, it's a confidence game. It's like, pretend you have the confidence that this is such a world-changing product, even though it's really just Uber for dry cleaning or whatever, that like, if you don't get in on the ground floor, you're going to be left behind. Or like, you know, with crypto, this is the way all money is going to work, and you have to get in now or have fun being poor. Or saying basically the same shit about AI, right? It's always, and honestly, whether or not there's actually a good product, it's always the same thing, right? Like it's all FOMO.
And it sucks because it can be better. There is a way. The thing that I always talk about is there is an alternate universe where Uber actually could have been probably the most disruptive company of all time. Had Uber tried to scale slower and charged more and had real employee benefits and a paycheck that they gave people, it would have had to grow very slowly and would have cost more in venture dollars. But I think that company would have been worth trillions and actually changed the world. Like, truly, had they used it as a way to actually create a bulwark for labor versus a way to screw workers again and again so venture capitalists can get rich, it could have been amazing. But that's not how these people are thinking. They're not thinking 10, 20, 30, 40 years. They're thinking 5 to 10 years so I can get the fuck out of this.
Yeah.
And it's so depressing because a better world is possible.
These people, because of the amount of money they made in large part in tech, they've taken over everything. And so they're applying this law. I mean, we could talk about journalism, right? They're applying this logic to the media properties they buy, which, like, that's not why you have a newspaper, right? Like, that's not the value of a newspaper is not its ability to, like, get a bunch of hype around it. And, like, we saw this with Vice, where it was valued at billions and billions of dollars, and then it collapsed because, no, that's not how newspapers work, right? That's essentially what Vice was trying to be. And that's not the way. They're not worth money in that way. It doesn't mean you can't make money off of them. There's a number of papers like the New York Times that are very profitable institutions. It's just you can't, it's not going to give you that kind of like astronomic return on investment that you do when somebody invents a fucking iPhone. And it shouldn't have to.
But what's crazy is like inventing the iPhone was very profitable, but Apple also did something with it. It's actually useful.
Yes, yes.
And
they
had
an understanding about what people wanted, you know?
And I think that that's the ultimate problem. I don't think the people running tech companies actually experience real people. They don't have real problems, but also they don't speak to real people. Adam Newman thinks, oh, my toilet's clogged. I will now call someone else to unclog it. I would never use a plunger. What's that? What is a plunger? I would actually love to ask him if he knows what a plunger looks like.
Yeah,
I bet he doesn't know.
Used a plunger.
But that's the thing. These people are disconnected.
He feels like the kind of guy who just moves. That happens.
Yeah, he's just, can't use the toilet anymore. Got to get rid of it. But I think to wrap it up, there is this genuine sense throughout all of this, through the original Rot Economy piece, through everything I'm talking about, that these people don't experience real life, that they've made so much money and that they think they've found a way to con money out of the world, that they just don't think about human beings and human problems anymore. And as long as these people are in power, tech's at risk.
Yeah, and so is everything else. Well, this was fun.
Yep, there we go. Robert, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. And thanks for being, you know, the Shai Halud of content, you know, just like the sandworm excretes spice, which allows the navigators to live forever and navigate through faster than light travel. You also produce spice. I'm trying to shovel in Dune references.
Yeah,
here.
There we go. Yeah. Sponsored by Jim. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Thank you for listening to Better Offline.
The editor and composer of the Better Offline theme song is Matt Osowski. You can check out more of his music and audio projects at mattosowski.com. MattOsowski.com.
You can email me at easy@betteroffline.com or check out betteroffline.com to find my newsletter and more links to this podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Better Offline is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more from Cool Zone Media, visit our website, coolzonemedia.com, or check us out on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.